Hey, what's up? Welcome back to the Spark Show DFS podcast. I'm your host, Sparky Lee. Before we get into the Texas Open, I want to talk a little bit about Dell Technologies match play. For me, the Final Four was a little bit disappointing. I mean, if you look at the possibilities we could have had there, looking at the Elite Eight, we had Sergio and Tiger Woods we could have had. How awesome would that matchup have been? Kevin Na versus Kevin Kisner, the Kevins for the People's Champion. And then, I don't know, Kevin Na versus Tiger, see who could walk in more putts and grab them before they hit the bottom of the jar. That would have been awesome, but you know it's match play, so anything can happen and you kind of get stuck with what you get. Still great television. I wish they covered it a little bit better, showed more shots, and less people just walking up fairways and lining up shots. Just give me shots. Give me picture in picture. As many shots as you can throw at me, I'm going to take. And I feel like most people that watch golf are the same way. They don't want to listen to the announcers. They just want to see shots. But biggest storyline over the week was probably Cooch Sergio, and I'm sure you're sick of hearing about it, but I'm going to tell you anyways. It was a par 3, Cooch bogeyed. He went sand, and then up and down to save bogey. Sergio had a little par putt, you know, probably 10, 12 feet, could have made for the win. He missed it. He was mad. He was 6 inches left of the hole, and he ran up to it and kind of slapped it back at the hole, missed it. And then I guess Cooch went up to the official, started talking to the official about it. And then who knows what really is said and how this usually plays out. But whatever happened, Cooch ended up not giving him the putt, maybe not by his own choice. He said he would have gave him the putt. And then the next hole, Sergio was blowing up like, well, you could make this right. Just concede the next hole and we'd all be square again. But you know, it is what it is. They're both kind of dickheads. Serves them right. I think just pairing these two every year would be great television to watch them fight and, like, not give putts to each other. Just going forward, they're probably not going to give each other another putt, which would be awesome to see in match play. But they both kind of broke the rules of etiquette when you look at it. So nobody's in the right. Everybody's in the wrong. Sergio, just don't be a baby. Don't run up and slap your putt. And then Cooch, don't be stingy. Like, just walk to the next hole, and Sergio gets that putt. You guys tie the hole. I think he kind of capitalized on an opportunity where he saw Sergio hit it, and he could say, just based off of technicality, like, oh, I would have gave him the putt, but, you know, he hit it, and that's the way it goes. But I don't want to speculate too much because I don't know what's going on in the inner workings. But that was kind of the big storyline there. Cooch versus Lucas Biergard in the Final Four. Molinari versus Kisner in the Final Four. Cooch versus Kisner in the finals. Kisner ends up winning it. I really honestly didn't watch too much of this because, like I said, the coverage was pretty awful. March Madness was going on at the same time. I had a little bit of money on that, so I was going back and forth. It was hard to keep track of. Tiger Rory was probably one of the best matchups of the day. It was obviously, or the week, that was the most covered out of all of it. That's pretty much all I have to say about the match play. We can move on. Valero Texas Open. That's what we're looking at this week. The course is TPC San Antonio. There's multiple courses on site, but we're playing at the Oaks course, which they've played at since 2010. Par 72, four par fives, four par threes, 10 par fours. It's 7,435 yards. It's hard to get a gauge on what's long and what's short here. Par fives play pretty long, play tough on tour compared to the average. Par threes, there's one under 200 yards, there's three over, and then the par fours, there's five short ones, five longer. So it's kind of a little mix and match of holes. It's tough to get a read on who's going to play the best here, so you got to be kind of open-minded and don't read into the stats too much. Apparently it's 1,100 feet above sea level, you know, typically means the ball is going to travel a little bit farther than it would, so it's not going to play as long. Greg Norman designed course, and the famous line here was he was going through a divorce while he was doing it. That's why the course is so tough. Kind of makes sense. Sergio also helped him with the course layout a little bit. This year I heard that they widen the fairways and then shorten the rough a little bit, which it's usually, it's bounced around a little bit, but last year it was 2 weeks behind the Masters, but now it's right in front of the Masters, so they're kind of trying to replicate that layout a little bit, which tells me that it's going to be better for bombers. You still can't spray it because there's trees, but if the fairways are a little bit wider, the rough's a little less penal, you can spray it, kind of, just go for it. So I think this year you might see more bombers do a little bit better than they tend to compared to the average. Bermuda greens, Bermuda fairway, there is some native Texas grasses throughout the course, so that kind of messes with it a little bit. Like I said, there's trees, some oak trees line quite a few of the holes. Some holes are narrow, some are a little bit wider, and then outside of that you'll have some native areas, they call it, where there's some rocky terrain, a little bit of sandiness going on. So if you spray it real bad, you're going to be in some trouble. Kevin Na shot a 16 here a few years ago. I feel like everybody that's done a write-up or a podcast on this has mentioned it, so I feel like it's a legality. You have to mention that Kevin Na shot a 16, so I got to throw some shade at him real quick. One big thing that you're going to notice looking at this is the greens tend to be elevated a little bit, and then they're protected by bunkers probably most of the holes, and they're just these jagged, nasty looking bunkers. So if you're not real accurate into these average size greens, then you're just going to roll right off and you're going to have a wicked chip up, or you're going to be in some sand off the greens. So that's one thing to look for. In years past, the wind out here in Texas has been a problem. Last year, Andrew Landry won it at 17 under, but you can win it at 8 under if the conditions get real bad. That was 2014. The winner was at 8 under, I do believe. So it kind of varies a little bit based on the weather. And being a month earlier in the season, I don't really know what to expect here. But I have heard the forecast looks better. The par fives play the toughest on tour compared to par, so they're a little bit longer. Par fives, you can't just, you know, eagle birdie these things, birdie them as a gimme. You know, you got to grind out these par fives, which is probably why this plays as one of the tougher courses on tour. There's, like I said, there's five par fours that are 410 yards or shorter. So those offer some of your best scoring chances that you have here, where you can just bomb it and then just chip it into the green. At this course, there are a lot of mid to short range irons and wedge shots. So when you're looking at guys that approach the green, look at guys that approach well from, you know, 200 yards and in. Which will bring me to my key stats for this time. I'm not trying to get too cute because, you know, we've seen winner from 8 under to 17 under. Bombers do well here. You can see guys like Jim Furyk do well here. So I want to keep it kind of simple. Strokes gained tee to green is something I'm looking at with an emphasis on strokes gained approaching the green. With the layout this year, with the wider fairways, shorter rough, I'm going to look at driving distance. I think the guys that tend to do well here in the top five or so typically are longer drivers, but I think more so this year it might lean that way. So I'm looking at driving distance, par four or par five scoring, but mostly just to look at the guys that are terrible on par five scoring, because if they have a rough time on normal par five scoring, they're going to have a terrible time here. So more so looking at guys that are bad at par five scoring. Green in regulation, just so you kind of get your ball striking scramblers in there. guys that can just get to the green, par four scoring, because that's typically, especially the shorter par fours, that's typically where you're going to do your scoring at. Birdie or better percentage, I'm probably going to look at that every week just so I can see guys that know how to put holes together and score, obviously. And then bogey avoidance is another one I'm going to look at, especially if the weather looks like it's going to get a little bit worse. Then you're going to want guys that can avoid getting bogeys. The field for this week, 144 golfers. Masters is next week, so you know a lot of guys are taking this week off. You do have Jordan Spieth here trying to get his game right. First time he's been here since 2015. Ricky Fowler is skipping the match play from last week, but he is playing in this one. Outside of that, you know, you got Cooch, you got Finau, a couple other decent guys, and then it really just kind of falls off from there, and it's kind of like the Punta Cana last week. Not very talented, but betting-wise, you know, there's opportunities here because there's less information out on some of these lower guys, so you can still make money. I almost kind of like playing these weeks more than I like playing you know, bigger weeks, just because you can pick some dark horses and really make some money that way. My strategy this week, you know, it's kind of changing depending on the weather, but usually the high winds kind of wreak havoc here. So you want to look at the forecast, maybe AM, PM stat guys, DFS wise, if you're looking at a storm system or something coming in. So I would look at a forecast. It's supposed to be nicer weather from what I hear. So maybe we get another 17 under like last year, but I'd still just look into that, because weather kind of plays the biggest factor here. Now to get into my picks. For the big dogs this week, I'm going to be looking at 9,200 and up on DraftKings. I only have four guys up in the big dogs category. This is kind of a thinner, weaker field, so I'm not going to spend too much time on these top guys. But first guy for my cash plays is Jim Furyk. You know, he finished second place at the Players Championship. He was, I want to say, 18th place at the Valspar 2 weeks ago. He had a tough draw at Dell Technologies Match Play, where he was playing Jason Day, Phil Mickelson, Henrik Stenson. So that was easily the toughest pod to come out of. So I, you know, I'm not going to hold that against him. This course, the layout, you know, his length isn't going to kill him here, because he's so accurate into the greens, so accurate off the tee. Good recovery game, even if he misses, goes into these nasty bunkers. So I love Furyk here. I think he's going to be kind of a decently highly owned guy, so cash play more so than GPP, but you could go either way. He's trying to work his way into the Masters, so he's looking for a win. So if you want to go GPP, I wouldn't knock you for it. Next guy, right after Jim Furyk at 9,600, is Jason Kokrak at 9,400. Kind of similar players, but, you know, Kokrak isn't great around the greens. He doesn't have that touch game that Furyk has. But if you take that and then you took it to the driving game, that's Kokrak, because he's much better off the tee, which could really help him here, especially, you know, plays a little bit longer on some of these longer holes, these tough par fives. Kokrak, tee to green, is going to be better. The only downside to him is if he's missing a lot of greens, then he's going to be in trouble, because his recovery game isn't that great. So he could fall off, but his floor is just so high with that ball striking game that I love him here too, and he's going to be another highly owned guy. So cash play more than GPP, but I like them both. And those are my only two big cash plays up at this top range. I think I'm going to kind of go contrarian here this week. I feel like everybody's going to skip the top three guys and then, you know, go down, make a more balanced lineup. I think I'm going to sprinkle in the top guys and then go with the stars and scrubs, because I feel like there's a lot of, like, sneaky depth here. So I'll probably run with that kind of a strategy. But you can really go any which way here, because there's I feel like there's enough decent guys from the top to about like 8,000 that you can really go any which way here and build a really solid lineup. But moving on from my cash plays, I'm going to go to GPP for the big dog category. First one is Tony Finau at 10,800. Like I said, the top three guys I feel like are going to get skipped over a little bit to make more balanced lineups here, which I can see it's kind of a smart play there. But as a contrarian play, I want to go up to the top and then I want to pick the top owned guy out of those three. In between Ricky, between Cooch and Finau at the top three priced, I think Finau is going to be the lowest owned. He hasn't had a top 10 since the Hero World Challenge back in November, and there was like 44 guys, I want to say, in that field, so that hardly counts towards anything. So I feel like he's going to go overlooked here. 2 years ago was the last time he played. He was at the Valero Texas Open. He was third. So if he's going overlooked and if a lot of guys are skipping that top tier of guys, then I might just lean hard on Finau this week and then build off of that. So if he top fives, I'm going to have a good shot at winning some cash this week. But we'll see. My next GPP play is Billy Horschel at 9,800. And it was kind of tough parsing this one apart because obviously Spieth at 10,300, nobody in their right mind is picking him. Underneath that, Sung Jae-im, 10,100. Then you got Billy Horschel. And then you got seven other guys all the way down to Abraham Ancer at 8,900 that I think are going to be pretty highly owned. So, GPP-wise, picking out a guy here that's going to be lower owned, that has high potential, is going to be key. So I think looking at Billy Horschel, 9,800, he's underneath, directly underneath Sung Jae-im, who I think is going to be decently chalky. Everybody's talking him up this week. I think Billy Horschel is going to be a key play. The only thing that scares me is his course history is kind of hit or miss, but really good in certain spots. A third in 2015, a fourth in 2016, an 11th in 2018 last year. And he's kind of floated around recently. But if everybody's looking at course history, they might kind of go that way. But just being between Sung Jae-im and Jim Furyk, Jason Kokrak are all right there. I feel like Billy Horschel being at the upper end of that price range is going to knock down his ownership, even though he has kind of the good finishes here over the years. So I like him as a GPP play. I guess it all kind of hinges on ownership. So later on in the week, that might change if I see that a lot of guys are flocking to him. But as of right now, I don't think he's going to be crazy high owned. So he's still a good pick. Those are it for my big dog category up at the top. After that, we go to the value category, 7,300 to 9,100 on DraftKings. And the first guy in my cash plays is going to be Ryan Moore at 9,100. He's right in that range that I told you between Ancer and Sung Jae-im, where there's going to be a lot of ownership probably in there. It's going to be tough to figure out who's highly owned. But Moore's got excellent course history. He finished 7th here last year, 18th the year before, and then he hasn't played it other than that in recent years. So really good form at this course. He's right above Lucas Beauregard, who probably shouldn't be priced this high at 9,000. So I'm thinking most people are going to go, okay, he's too highly owned, not going to touch that. So a little bit of ownership might pivot towards Ryan Moore. So that's kind of why I'm sticking him at cash play. I would rather have him as a GPP play because I don't really trust him that much. Especially with the course history here, I feel like that's going to garner a little bit more ownership. So, if anything, I'm going Ryan Moore cash. If I'm going GPP with Ryan Moore, I better be convinced and I'm going all in. And it's just like the next two guys in this category for me are guys that I don't really trust, but I like the looks of, but I think their ownership's going to be high. So, that kind of handcuffs me to cash plays. Aaron Baddeley, 8,300. Ryan Palmer, 8,400. Baddeley, he has had his struggles. He's on a bit of an upswing here recently. He's got two top tens. Both are in weaker fields, but this is also kind of a weaker field, so that will translate. The big thing, though, he finished 17th at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, which is a much better field. So if he's finishing 17th there, then there must be something in the tank at this point. So I like Baddeley. He's got good course history. So does Ryan Palmer. Ryan Palmer did miss his last cut at the Players, but right before that, he finished 4th at the Honda 2 weeks before that. So I don't really trust him all that much. I don't really trust Baddeley all that much. I don't really trust Ryan Moore all that much. But they could, any one of them, top five. And they're going to be a little bit higher ownership, I think. So cash plays for sure. You can play them. And I think my strategy going into it is GPP. I'm going to fade two of them and pick one of them. And then go heavy just to make sure I'm higher than everybody else ownership-wise. But just looking back at course history for Baddeley and Ryan Palmer, in the last 4 years between the two of them, there's 6 top 20s. 4 of those were top 10s. So I feel like that's going to just be a lot of ownership right there between those two. So cash play, certainly. GPP, you might want to pick one and just go heavy on them to make sure you got some leverage. But I like all three of those picks. My last solid pick for cash plays is Sung Kang. He's made 6 straight cuts. 3 of those were top 20s. So he's in pretty solid form right now, especially a guy at 7,700. He has a tied for 6 here back in 2017. On FanDuel, he's a little bit higher priced. So I think that's more of a GPP play on FanDuel. You still go cash there, in all honesty, because of his recent form, but I can see his ownership going a little bit higher on DraftKings, which I wouldn't want to be a part of if he's high-owned on DraftKings and in big tournaments. But either way, cash lineups, I still like him. My final two for the value category, cash plays, which are kind of just borderline guys, is J.B. Holmes and Luke List are both at 8,000 on DraftKings. And in this weaker field, I mean, a month and a half ago, both these guys would have been over 9,000. So I feel like their ownership's going to be really high, which would kind of sway me towards big tournaments. Don't pick them. But cash plays at 8,000, two guys that can easily top five or even win. Maybe not Luke List because he doesn't win, but he'll top five for you. These guys are just big time cash plays. I think Luke List is 10,500 on FanDuel. JB Holmes is 9,900 on FanDuel. So over there, probably better GPP options. But DraftKings wise, stick to cash. Or at least that's what I'm going to do anyways. For my risky plays within this price range, first guy is Johnny Vegas. His price tag is a little bit up there, 8,700 on DraftKings. He's 10th in strokes gained off the tee, 28th in tee to green this year. So his ball striking has been phenomenal, which would lead you to believe that here he'd be great, but his course history here is not very good. His best finish in the last 5 years was 34th, and then he's missed 3 out of his last 5 cuts. But I mean, he finished 3rd at the Players, so he's in great form. He's hitting the ball well, so I think you can kind of throw that course history out of the window. But that's probably going to weigh in people's minds when they're picking him and say, oh, he just can't play here. So that will bring his ownership down, I'm thinking. So he could be a good GPP play here, especially at this price tag. When they see him up a little bit higher in that course history, then they're going to go, you know what, I'll pivot somewhere else. But I think that could leave him lower owned, and he'd be a good option. this next guy, you know, in all honesty, I don't know if I've ever picked him in all my years of playing fantasy golf, DFS stuff. Denny McCarthy, you know, 8,100. It sticks out to me. It feels like a good play, which is weird because I've never looked at him before and been like, this is a good play. But above him is Aaron Baddeley, Ryan Palmer, Charlie Hoffman. Charlie Hoffman, people still talk about him because he's a winner here and he's, you know, he's played better in big events. So those three above him. Below him, you got J.B. Holmes, Luke List, Siwoo Kim. I feel like Denny McCarthy's invisible in this spot. I don't love Denny McCarthy, but if he's invisible here and nobody's picking him, then he could be a great pick because he's kind of played some sneaky good golf here. In his last 12 rounds, he's only shot over par once. So if he's really low owned in this spot, that would be, I mean, all you got to do is pick him one out of 10 lineups and you're probably double the field ownership wise. So you don't have to pick a lot of Denny McCarthy. I guess it depends on what his ownership pans out to, but I don't see him being over 10% owned. So I feel like he could be a really good sneaky pick here. He finished 20th here last year. I think that's the only time he's played here. So, I mean, there's a little bit of course history, a little bit of success here. His last 12 rounds, he's only shot over par once. Could be a decent pick. And then my last guy for the value category of risky picks is this one. It's just I'm putting a blindfold on and I'm just shooting blindly at a target because Luke Donald has played 5 times in the last year, 8 times in the last year. You know, 2 years ago, he was a great pick in a field like this. Like that Steve Stricker kind of savvy guy. Doesn't play much, but he's playing these weak events. And he's better than all these young guys. So he used to be a good pick here. We haven't seen a lot of him. So it's kind of risky. There's no form to really go off of. Other than he was 9th at the Valspar 2 weeks ago. 2016, he finished 13th here. But like I said, you know, 2 years ago, he's a different kind of player. But at least that shows you that, like, he can score well here. So if he goes low-owned, this is a very risky pick because there's not a lot of data on him this year anyways. But I kind of like Luke Donald to surprise people in this spot, especially on a tough course where it's mentally it's going to get to these younger guys, and if he's an old savvy vet that can just get to greens and avoid blowups, he might be a decent pick here. Can't believe I'm saying that with Luke Donald, but this is where we're at. My sleeper picks right after that, this new category, 7,200 and under on DraftKings. So we're moving on to a whole nother category. Cash plays. Top of the list, Matt Jones at 7,200. He's gone 6 straight cuts without finishing worse than 55th. 3 of those were in the top 20. I think there was a couple 13th places, 18th place in there. So it's nothing crazy high, but he's just been on a steady grind here lately. His course history isn't terrible. Out of the last, I think he missed his last cut here, but the 3 years before that he made the cut, 2017, he was 13th place. And in 4 of his last 8 rounds, he shot 3 under or better. I think most of his game goes to his driver. He's got a pretty consistent driver. His game around that's pretty decent too. But with half of his rounds at 3 under better, he's shown that he can score a little bit. So I like Matt Jones in this spot at 7,200. You know, he's pretty decent player to save some money with. And probably, I don't want to make any guarantees, but probably making the cut. My next pick for my cash lineups from the sleeper category. He's probably my favorite. A few weeks ago, I was kind of hesitant on him. I was dipping my toes into that pool, but it's Nick Taylor. Now I'm just going straight cannonball. I'm going head first into it. He's made 5 straight cuts at this point, all of which are 33rd or better. 16th at the Players' Championship. Very solid. Last 3 years at the Valero Texas Open here, he missed a cut last year, but before that, he has a 21st, 22nd place finish. So he's shown that he can play well here. And if he's getting into a good stretch of golf and he's doing it kind of quietly because he's only doing it in the last, month, I think Nick Taylor at 7,200 could be a good pick down in this spot. My next guy for the cash picks, Wyndham Clark. He was DQ'd at the Players, like I said, the other week. And then I jumped back right on him because I feel like people were going to leave him. And he was at the Valspar. I think he was 37th or something. Didn't score too well. So I feel like people still aren't going to be, he's not going to be high on their radar. But he kills the ball. 5th in driving distance, 20th in strokes gained putting. He gets a lot of birdies, 13th in birdie average. So at a course like this, where there's a lot of short par fours, like even if he can just hold his own on those other holes, if he's just out bombing everybody and then he can just kind of wedge it and then slap in a little 2-footer for birdie on those holes, then he's going to be in a great spot. And you kind of want guys that are good iron players here, but with a lot of the holes playing shorter, short irons and wedges, I feel like it's going to skew a little bit. So these bombers are, especially with the wider rough, shorter, or wider fairways, shorter rough, the bombers are going to have a slight edge. So I kind of like him in this spot, Wyndham Clark, 7,100. My risky plays, my GPPs down in the sleepers. I feel like I've heard a lot of guys talking about Scott Stallings, so if his ownership goes too high, then I'm definitely going to leave. But he's been very hit or miss, but when he's on, he's on. Out of his last 8 outings, he has missed every other cut, I want to say. It's been pretty much a roller coaster ride for him. But in that time, out of those 8, he's got 2 top 10s, couple, 43rd place finishes. He's played here a few times, 2015 and 2017. He was in the 100s, missed the cut there. And then in 2016, right in between those two, he finished 13th. So even at this course, he's kind of up and down quite a bit. So if nobody's going to pick him, this would be a great one to be a sleeper pick that you're on, because there's, a good chance he misses the cut, good chance he makes the cut. It's like 50-50 at this point. If he does make the cut, then there's like a almost 50% chance he's in the top 10. So it's a really big roll of the dice in this situation. But Scott Stallings at 7,000 for a top 10, might be something to think about. Jonathan Bird is a guy that I put money on last week at Corrales Punta Cana. I finished 4th. Off the tee, he's awful. He's 199th in strokes gained off the tee, 201st in driving distance. So right off the get-go, he's got a real big disadvantage, but his iron game is actually really good. The rest of his game is pretty solid. So especially if it gets kind of windy here, gets real dicey, and those bombers are getting pushed into the trees, and you want, shorter, accurate guys. I don't even know if I'd call them accurate off the tee, but it just kind of leveled the playing field from a driving standpoint at a tough course like this that can get windy. I still like Bird here. He's had 3 straight finishes of 22 or better. Like I said, last week he was 4th place at Corrales Punta Cana, 21st place at the Puerto Rico Open. But obviously those fields are pretty abysmal, but this field isn't great, so it's not like it's not going to correlate that much. 22nd at Pebble Beach, so that one is actually kind of impressive. Yeah, if it gets windy, Jonathan Bird, 6,900, a great iron worker, probably not a terrible pick. And the next guy in this category, DJ Trahan, 6,700. I've heard a little bit of buzz about him this week, so at 6,700, might not be the greatest GPP play, but still can't go that highly owned, so not that bad. His stats are just way too good right now to pass up. He's got three top 20s in a row, but again, Puerto Rico Open, Punta Cana, so those aren't as impressive. He's 19th in strokes gained tee to green this year, 7th in green in regulation, which are two of the biggest stats that I'm looking at this week. So, like, stats-wise, he rates out really well. So, 6,700, I can't see him being too highly owned. I might sprinkle him in some bigger tournaments this week. Now to move on to the last category of just dark horses, just random guys in general that I think can do all right. Vaughn Taylor, 6,800. Looking at his stats, I wrote him down and then I looked at his stats and I'm like, what the hell am I thinking? But he makes most of his strokes off of putting, which isn't something that you want to see. But he, and then I looked at his recent form and he's got top 10s at the Desert Classic, the Genesis. He finished 18th at Valspar 2 weeks ago. Last year here, he finished 16th. So even if his stats aren't great, like on a tough course like this, you got an older vet that's kind of savvy, knows how to work his way into a top 20. He might be a decent sneaky pick here, especially because his recent form is kind of peaking, or it's still on his way up before it peaks where everybody's on him. So I kind of like Vaughn Taylor to be a sneaky pick here. Another guy I'm looking at down from these dark horses is Adam Shank at 6,700. He's made four of his last five cuts. All the made cuts are 33rd or better. Outside of his, you know, his work around the greens, his scrambling stuff, he's a pretty solid overall player. And I feel like this week, with these runoffs, with these nasty bunkers, you're not going to have your normal scrambling opportunities. So that stat around the green and in scrambling isn't going to translate so much here. So I feel like these guys that have, you know, weaker around the green games might have a bigger leg up than you would think. So I kind of like Adam Shank here, a guy that's just been scoring real well lately and is very cheaply priced. And especially he scoring wise, he's been solid. He just doesn't blow up. And this, I want to say the cut line here is usually around plus one on average. So if you can slide some of these guys that are in the 6,000s through this cut line and just give them a shot, then you're going to be sitting pretty. And I think he's in a good spot to do that for you. And then my very last guy, who I don't think I've mentioned in like 2 months, but he's back here and he's popping on my radar, Sam Ryder. The same kind of thing with Shank. Good putter. You know, his ball striking and his putting, solid. Around the green, not as much, but he's 7th in sand save percentage, and there's some gnarly bunkers here, so that could kind of keep him in it. I'm, you know, 6,300 Sam Ryder on DraftKings, and then he's 8,100 on FanDuel, which with that wide of a discrepancy, I mean, DraftKings, it's worth taking a shot on, obviously. FanDuel, maybe not so much, but DraftKings, I'm going to play him. I'm going to play him again. I said I wasn't going to bet him outright winner. Yeah, I probably won't. That would be it for my DFS plays this week. A lot of people at my office have been on spring break, so I've had a little bit bigger workload. I haven't been able to get to much of the outright bets and whatnot, and I don't know if I'm going to get to an article this week, in all honesty. but I will go over some betting advice right now. So what I really noticed when I was looking at this tournament was in the last 5 years, the winner has never come back from more than 4 strokes after the first round. Jimmy Walker 2015 was 4 strokes back after the first round and then won it at 11 under. 2017, Kevin Chappell was 3 strokes back after the first round and then won it at 12 under. Both those were, you know, 5-6 under for the first round leader. 2018, 16, 14, Andrew Landry, Charlie Hoffman, Stephen Bowditch were all 2 strokes back of the leader after the first round, and then they went on to win it. Typically, the leader is around 5-6 under here after the first round. So anybody, you know, shooting 1-2 under, depending on the leader, is probably going to have a shot to win it. And what I've seen in those, in that stretch, 14 is the most guys that you're going to see at that score. And, you know, you might see as little as 5 guys within that score. So I feel like if you see the right number, then you can hammer down on that. Somebody that's only, you know, 1 or 2 strokes back of the lead, that's got a good number, then you can bet them to outright win. I feel like that's going to be your best value play of the week. I'm probably not going to bet too many outright winners beforehand, just knowing the strategy going into it. And then when you see 4 out of the last 5 winners have been leading or tied for the lead in the third round, that's another good bet to go win on there. Your numbers aren't going to be great at that point. I'm pretty sure the books are going to know this kind of stat going into it. So you can pick somebody that you really like that's, you know, in the lead, maybe a stroke back of the lead after the first round, and then really throw down some money on them for a good chance, because there's just not many guys that come out of nowhere to win this tournament. It's a tough tournament to, once you get out to an early lead, to catch up, and it's an easy tournament to, once you get that lead, to play conservative and stay out in front. And that's just what I'm seeing from the stats. It could change this year. You know, it's golf. You know, it's pretty sporadic. Anything can kind of change. But that's just what I'm seeing so far, and that's kind of how I'm going to bet this one. Next week, you got the Masters. That's it for my betting this week. Next week, I hope I'm going to have more in-depth stuff, more stats. I might split this up into 2 different podcasts just so I have enough time to kind of delve into everything that I want to look at. But that's it for this week. I don't think I'm going to get to any art. Usually, I have an article with my model and different percentages on who's going to win, who's going to top 10, who's going to make the cut, who's going to do this and that. But I don't think I'm going to have time this week. I'm going to try to tomorrow, maybe later in the afternoon. But if not, you know, who cares? Good luck this weekend. Shoot them straight.